Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 112 of Season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Mark Hoffmeyer of the Deep Blue Sea Pod, Con Air Pod, and Movies, Films, and Flicks. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Last episode I was in an air duct. This episode I am inside a helicopter. Very loud, but I got a really great condenser mic. So I hope you can edit a lot of this out.
All right. I will do my best to edit as little out as possible so people can enjoy our conversation even better.
At least 25%.
Okay.
We'll talk about later in the chapter.
You know, 25%. You know, I can live with that.
That's right. Terrible.
They really are. So Minute 112 begins with John and Carl continuing to frolic in the pipes and ends with Hans gaining a new idea for a strategy. So yesterday we ended things with John and Carl fighting very ferociously throughout these empty areas of the building. And the last thing we saw was John being thrown onto a pile of pipes, and then Carl leaping forward to jump onto him. So they continue their fight through the first part of this minute. At a certain point, John ends up getting the upper hand and grabs Carl's head and begins to bang it against the pipes. I mean, that's really brutal. Did you count how many times he does that?
Yeah, he does it three, doesn't he? And then he punches him in the back of the head?
No, he bangs his head twice and then punches him three times. You know, while Carl is still down. I mean, this is definitely street fighting at its best.
Carl's skull is made of adamantium. Just let you know.
It's very possible. That's very true. Now, Mark, in the previous seasons, okay, you were in the Great Escape. We knew you as Goon Mark, and then in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, you were known as TSA Mark. So, where is your character in this week at any point? Do you think so?
Oh, I mean, listen, these terrorists are too classy to be me. I couldn't be Goon Mark would never get hired to be in this crew. Classy, best of the best. So I would not be part of this terrorist group.
Well, I was thinking that you'd be known as maybe Eurotrash Mark or something like that.
Yeah, no, you know, you're even Eurotrash Mark just isn't classy enough to be part of this crew. Like, he's just, you know what I mean? It's just you got to wear sweaters and you got to dress up well.
You can be like Tony and wear sweats. You know, I'm still
either.
After so many months trying to figure out where he hides his wallet. You know, if he's wearing sweatpants.
I don't even have the confidence to wear sweatpants like that. So I would not be part of this group. I would not fit in. I would not be hired. I don't think I would be part of the Nakatomi people because I think I would just be very I couldn't play scared to save my life. So I wouldn't be one of those extras. I would be one of the cops that gets stuck in the thorn bushes. That's in the rose bushes. That's what character would be. Yeah. I would be cop
so
Mark
you're,
in this movie.
I would say you're prick Mark, right?
Yeah, prick Mark. Yeah, I'm prick Mark. I'm Sergeant Prick, and I get stuck in the rose bushes, and I'm like, like that's where I am. Like, I'm one of those guys that goes up to the door and gets shot in the leg, and then they have to carry me out of there after I get stuck in the roses. That's me. I live, but I have a leg injury. Like, I'm not successful. All my characters in these movies can't be successful. Like in Great Escape, they escaped from me. Like they're like, where's Mark? Like he just wasn't paying attention. Everyone escapes. So
didn't stop didn't stop Neil from getting punched out by the taxi driver.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I wouldn't do any of that. And I think I would if this was like a blue collar thieves. I would fit in well. I'd wear like a cardigan. I would show up. I could be one of the blue collar crew in this movie. If a bunch of Americans infiltrated a Dutch bank,
so
I could be
you're
one of
Ellis.
The Americans.
You're Ellis.
I'm Ellis. I mean, yeah.
You got the beard for it, Mark.
I could be Ellis, but yeah, I would be in this movie that we made. Americans go to Holland, steal from a bank. We're fighting Dolph Lundgren. He's the hero. I'm the villain. My name, my nickname would be Finley. I would be the second one to go.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Feels right. Feels right. He would drop me into a fish tank. That's how Finley would die in our hypothetical movie. But in this one, I am Officer Prick because I get stuck in the rose bushes. And I go,
Sergeant ah! Prick. Sergeant Prick.
Yeah, Sergeant Prick. And then I get shot in the leg. I could do that. I could feasibly do that. So that's it right there. That's my character. One of the officers who gets hit in a rose bush.
Okay. You see, it's great that we're able to figure out who Mark is in this movie. So
No, I thought about this, but I couldn't be one of these guys. I don't look – these guys look cool.
Your hair's not long
these
enough.
These henchmen look cool, though, and they look suave. I don't look – I'm not a suave guy. I don't even think I could try to – I was in a show one time, though, and they said I was too L.A., which didn't make sense. And then they didn't want me to be a cop because it was supposed to be blue-collar cops. I still got paid for the day. But they said I was too L.A., even though I'd never been to L.A. So, yeah, that was kind of odd. But
you just didn't dress right.
No, well, they put me in a cop's uniform, but they said I guess I meant I was, like, too L.A., like, handsome or something. Like, I wasn't, like, a country cop. They said I could never be a country cop.
That's very strange. Okay.
Yeah, but I got paid, and I just hung out and drank coffee in the outfit. Okay. They never used me.
All right. Hey, that worked. Why not? So at this point, John continues beating on Carl, and I love how he taunts Carl, you know, as he's finally John is winning the fight. You know, he's just like beating on him, and he goes, "You should have heard your brother squeal when I broke his neck." Which is a fun line. You know, it's a little too much, but it's still great.
People got to learn. Like heroes. I hate it when they're like, I'm going to go and I'm going to kill your kids after this. And then the hero's like, no, and saves the day. If you're fighting somebody, don't make them angry don't further angry them. Don't give them a chance to Hulk out. McLean, I mean, he just can't get over himself. He's still kind of a punk. He is a loudmouth and he doesn't have much impulse control. So I guess it matches the character. But if you're beating up a terrorist and you have the upper hand, don't make him Hulk out or pull an ultimate warrior by talking about how you killed his brother. Like,
exactly.
Keep your mouth shut. You know, if you're a villain, don't talk the hero and be like, I'm going to go to your house and shoot your dog.
Like, well, that's the James Bond type of thing. You know, the villain has to tell you what he's going to do next.
Yeah. I just don't do it. If I'm the villain and I have the hero on the ropes, I'm going to be like, hey, we're out of here. We'll see you later. Here's money for a cab. We'll check you later. Peace. And then I would go blow up his dog. But I wouldn't infuriate him by telling him that I would blow up his dog. Like, I don't want to make him rush home.
Are you talking about John Wick, or are you talking about someone else?
No, not the Baba Yaga. Like, I would pull someone adjacent to him, but was, like, the JV version of John Wick. If that makes sense. The junior varsity.
That makes sense.
The JV. I would blow up his dog. But I wouldn't tell him. So while he's in the cab going, those are nice villains. Like, they gave me money to ride my cab home. Maybe I should stop at Starbucks. Boom.
Right.
Never taunt them. That's my theory.
Okay. I agree with you. I think it's too much. And I don't think it's funny that he says it, but and you know what? If you think about it, I think it is something that John McClane would say.
Yeah.
You know, it fits with the character. It's out of place, but it fits with the character.
Oh, it's great writing for McClane, but not for, you know, Sergeant Prick. Sergeant Prick would never say that.
Right.
Goon Mark would never say that. Goon Mark doesn't. I'm not as braggadocious as McClane is. So I would never act that way. That's for sure. Right.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, then the shot changes, and we get a shot of two helicopters flying towards or flying around through the LA skyline. Now, do you know what type of helicopters these are?
I do not, but I'm assuming you do.
These are Hueys.
You could go to the Internet Movie Plane Database and pull up everything from this film and look it up.
That's right. That is very.
And they used 24 cameras.
I didn't do that.
Oh, you already knew.
I knew there were Hueys. These are Hueys.
So we have helicopter Hueys, and we have Huey Lewis Guard in this movie. There's a lot of Hueys. There's a lot of Hueys in this movie.
There is triple Hueys. Do you know what the real official name of a Huey is?
Let's see.
Without looking it Huey. Up.
So Huey, the official name of Huey, the official name. So H. It is Nope, I don't know it.
Okay, so you were on the right path at the beginning. So it's known, it's a Bell Iroquois. Okay, that's the name of the line of things, and it was originally designated as an HU-1 Iroquois. Okay, hence they got the name of the Huey, HU-1.
Oh!
But a few years, when they were still in the process of making it, they changed the name to UH. But the name Huey still stuck. So it was continued to be used as, it's been used now for 70 years, okay? So it's a utility military helicopter that was made by a Bell Helicopter Company. And it was the first member of the prolific Huey family. There have been numerous other helicopters that have come out since then, you know, that are also that are part of the same type of, you know, group of helicopters. It was the first turbine powered helicopter that was being used. It was first used in combat during the Vietnam War. When it was deployed there in March of 1962. During Vietnam, it was used for general support, air assault, cargo transport, aeromedical evacuation, search and rescue, electronic warfare, ground attack missions. It was also used for reconnaissance operations, psychological warfare, and many other types of support roles. It is equipped, during Vietnam with rockets, grenade launchers, and machine guns. Okay, how many Hueys do you think were deployed during Vietnam by the Americans? So we're talking from 62 till 75. Okay, so a period of 13 years. No, 7,000. There were 7,000 of them. But now here's a better question.
That was my first guess.
Really? Okay, you should have gone with your gut.
Yeah, but I always do 45. I don't know why. Okay.
All right.
They're divisible.
Yeah, that's true. And of those 7,000 helicopters, how many of them do you think were destroyed in combat or during Vietnam?
6,123.
No, they're you're a little off. So it's 3,300. But that's still a really high number. Think about it. There were 58,000 deaths of soldiers in Vietnam, and there were 3,300 helicopters that were destroyed. That's a lot.
They said helicopter pilots were nuts out there. Not nuts, but you know, you had kind of had to be hearing the stories about like the making of Apocalypse Now and the helicopter pilots and who they were based on, the people they talked to. Also, this is dangerous. They're flying through LA in these things,
and they're flying really low also.
And like, I know they had 24 cameras. They only ended up shooting for about 30 minutes because, you know, the cops are like, this is way too dangerous in the neighbors. But they did that. That's like, I've worked helicopter stunts before. I wasn't in the helicopter, but we shot with helicopters and they take forever. So the fact that they got all this in 30 minutes with 24 cameras, I can't believe they like after Twilight Zone. I'm amazed they did this. Like this.
Wow. I was just about to start talking about the Twilight Zone. So what do you know about Twilight Zone and Hueys?
Well, I mean, the death of the actor and the two children, there was a helicopter.
Correct. And Vic Morrow and two children.
Vic Morrow and two children, the pyrotechnics went off, hit the helicopter. Vic Morrow had two children in his arms. A helicopter came and just blasted him, like was sawed right through him, killed.
I think it actually decapitated him.
Yeah,
if I remember correctly, that happened on the 23rd of July in 1982. So we're talking just 6 years before this movie.
All those people should be in jail. You should never have had children there with a helicopter. That is the fact that he kept making movies. Landis, I don't need to get on a soapbox, but that's money right there. That's money speaking. But to put children and pirate tech. So watching the scene, but I'm still impressed by the pilots, what they got out of it. You know, they had 2 hours to do it. The neighbors were mad. But once again, what's great about Die Hard is you get that feeling, you get that rush. I mean, the Johnsons on the plane are selling it really well. They're really into it. They're talking about the 25%. You have this whole new element of characters coming in, and it works. It does. It looks great. You get the practical shots. They did it, and it looks really good. But yes. Geez Louise is a dangerous.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there's no question about that. So basically, you know, the helicopters come in, and as you said, they have some great external shots of the helicopters flying through LA. We're going to have that today. We're going to have it a few other times this week too. And then, you know, they focus in on the inside of the helicopter, and we get to see, you know, Little Johnson and Big Johnson there. And Little Johnson says to Big Johnson, "So what do you think? What do you figure the breakage?" Then Big Johnson goes, "Figure we take out the terrorists, lose 20-25% of the hostages tops." And Little Johnson looks at him and goes, "I can live with that."
Oh gosh.
And then he turns to the pilot and goes, "Keep this thing on the deck. They're expecting transports, not gunships." So it's just, first of all, this is a great conversation between the two of them. You know, because it really just shows that they don't really care about the hostages at all. Mm-hmm. You know, if you say that there's 30 hostages and they're saying we're going to lose 20-25% of them, so they're saying that basically anywhere between 5 and 8 hostages are going to get killed here. You know, and we don't care about them.
Oh man, they're just hotshot pilots. Like, it's funny that you almost create secondary antagonists as well as all the other antagonists. But still, I mean, they needed to write around a lot of what Bruce Willis not being available. They needed to add characters. They needed to work, and these guys sell it for sure. I mean, they're memorable. I mean, when you have characters like the Johnsons, they're just so memorable. That's what this movie's great at. It's just so many side. You know, a movie's good when you know the characters' names. How many of these agents have we seen in other movies? I couldn't tell you the name of really, you know, most of these diehard knockoffs. I couldn't tell you the name of most of the characters, but the fact that we're talking about the Johnsons, I know it right off the bat.
No, but that's also because of the joke. You get that. You're going to understand that because of the two jokes that they say about Johnson.
Yeah, but I don't know.
You know, good screenwriting. I'm Agent Johnson. I'm Special Agent Johnson. No relation, you know, that type of thing. And then you have the other line that they're going to, that they said, I think it was last week, where he goes, "Yes, this is Johnson." No, the other one. You know? Yeah. So, I mean, it worked. But you're right.
Yeah.
We remember the names of these characters. You remember the name of Robinson. You remember the name of Thornburg. Because they're memorable characters, even though they're not the main focus of the movie.
No, not at all. But, I mean, so, they found a way to really create some cool side characters that are super memorable. And that 20, you never really hear that in a movie. Where they're just so gleeful about it. They're like, "Yeah, I can live with that."
No problem. A few dead hostages, we're good.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's so gnarly. Oh, geez, Louise. But the shots look great. Cleared
because
out.
Because also
downtown.
later on when you find out what happens to these two characters, you don't care because of this conversation. It's mm-hmm. it's this conversation is what makes us unsympathetic to them. Yeah, you know, everything else they said beforehand. Exactly. Everything else beforehand, they're basically talking as bureaucrats. So who cares? You know, they say, okay, you know, you're going to lose your job, or they say that, you know, that we're here to assess the situation. Like, who cares? But because they have this short little conversation where they basically say, we don't care about the hostages. So when they meet their demise, was it next week, I think, or 2 weeks from now, no one cares. We actually, in some ways, cheer the fact that they're dead.
Yep.
Because they're just their death, very despicable.
And a great miniature shot, which I'm sure you'll have a great time talking about, that Joel Silver wanted.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. That'll be fun to discuss.
Right. But and I love the way that these helicopters, as they're moving, they really move in sync.
Yeah.
You know, there's they got the best tandem between them.
They got the best in the world. You know, like just they couldn't hear you. Oh, wait, that guy's not wearing goggles up there. But yeah, the two of them moving. I mean, you have to get the best. Well, in the world to fly.
You can see it's a fake shot when you show them inside of the helicopter. You know, the L.A. skyline looks painted on. You know, it's a green screen or whatever they used the equivalent of back then, because of the way it's just moving back and forth. You have the guy looking out the window. You know, he's facing out the window, and that's it.
Oh man! And then this, you're right; they are in sync. But I mean, you get the best in the business to do this. Like you get really pros, and you can tell, and that adds so much to it. How many PAs they had to have? They probably had to have hundreds. Wow. Because you have to lock off streets, apartments.
Do you think there are apartments here, or these were mostly businesses?
But I mean, there's people probably working late. You got to have somebody at the entrance.
No, but maybe they're doing this at 3 a.m. or something like that. You know.
I mean, janitors.
They're doing it on Christmas Eve.
Janitors.
When nobody's there but people who go to the Nakatomi, you know, party on Christmas Eve.
If I'm a producer, I am putting a PA in every single one of those buildings at 3 a.m. Because you don't want to have somebody walking out during this. You don't have much time. You don't want a shot wrecked by angry people with signs or someone just sauntering out. It's dangerous. It's like I've been on shoots before where we shot on one block, you bring in 50 PAs.
Wow.
Like the accountant, there's a car chase, 50 PAs. You had on every street, you had someone on every corner, PA on every corner, because you don't want to have somebody getting walked out and hit. And these are helicopters. So, you have the lockup that you need is absurd. It's absurd lockup. So, hundreds are needed.
Wow.
But still, it still looks great. It still looks wonderful. It's deserted because it's late at night. It's Christmas Eve, yada, yada. But they didn't shoot it during that time. So
no, obviously not.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't know. I just love it. I love it. It looks great. We get the fight scene back.
No, the shot changes and we can see Yuli. And Yuli is herding everyone up the stairs, you know, screaming at them. You know, saying, move it. Come on, move. Come on, come on. Move it. Let's go. Move.
More good dolly work, that's for sure. Keeping up with him as he goes up the stairs, which will come into play later.
Yeah, which is great. Because I love the fact that he ascends the stairs with them. You know, he's like, move it, move it, move it. And then, like, as one of the last guys goes, he's like pushing him a little bit and then starts going up with them. You know, hurting them, basically.
Yeah. Isn't it great?
Yeah.
It's capturing the momentum. It looks great. And can I ask, we're gonna move into the scene where Gruber throws Bonnie Bedelia down, Holly down, but I love how he puts his hand in his pocket to talk on the walkie-talkie. Hans Gruber is so classy that when he talks on the walkie-talkie, he puts his hands in his pockets.
Because he's not really talking on the walkie-talkie. Yeah.
I just love it. He just puts his hands in his pockets. He's so chill. Yeah. And he buttoned up his suit, too, when he's standing up. He has this the buttoned up. Gruber's classy.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever put my hands in my pockets when I talked on the walkie-talkie on set.
No, you'll have to start doing that. And when someone asks you, Mark, why are you doing that? And you're like, I'm doing Hans Gruber.
Just wear a suit to set. Everyone think I'm the weirdo.
Tell them that you got what, you know, Arafat buys it from there also. So Theo and Christoph are, you know, still working on putting all these bombs into bags. Yeah, they definitely came prepared with enough bags to haul out, you know, $600 million worth of bearer bonds. Jeez. And as they're doing that, you see Hans show up, and he goes, Theo, a little bonus for us. You know, because he enters the vault with Holly, and you see Eddie behind him. So apparently, even though the script wanted Eddie to go upstairs, in the movie, Eddie stays here.
Smart. Yeah. They know where the importance is. It's the money.
Yeah. And Holly, at this point, this is the first time she sees what they're actually doing. So she now knows what the plan is. you know, which tomorrow she'll talk about it, but for today, I think it's tomorrow, maybe it's on Thursday, but for now, she just keeps silent. And then he like pushes her to the floor. You know, he doesn't do it very gently. And he goes, please sit down, sit down. So he's being polite as he's pushing her down.
Yeah, he's one of those snide people. He's one of those snide people that you think they're being nice to you, but they're just being really mean.
Yeah.
Holly goes down easy, though. But I mean,
and she goes, hey. Hey. Yeah. She screams up, hey.
Good gamble work, though.
Yeah. And then Hans turns to Theo. That's right. Yeah. It's a great long shot there. And then Hans turns to Theo again and goes, a policeman's wife might come in handy. Now, what do you think a policeman's wife can come in handy for? No, I'm asking this seriously. John is not an LA policeman. You know, it could come in handy for bargaining with John, but it wouldn't come in handy with bargaining with Powell or with Robinson or anything like that. And at this point, why does he need to bargain with him? His plan is still working, even though most of his men are dead.
He should have said the policeman's wife. She'll be handy.
Right.
Because then that all would have been solved. Because you have John McClane's wife with a gun to her head. So you have a kind of a trump card there.
Correct.
Unless there's tape around. And then you're in trouble.
Well, you never know.
Yeah. But yeah, if he said the policeman, that would have been it.
Yeah. And then he does what you said. He puts his hand in his pocket and pulls out lifts up his CB to his hands and gets ready to talk and doesn't get to talk. Well, people are going to have to come back tomorrow to hear what Hans has to say here. Maybe it's something important. Who knows?
Orders pizza.
There you go.
Yeah.
So what's you did say 30 minutes or less, didn't you?
Yeah, hey. The pizza people come and they sneak out in the pizza van.
There you go. That's the part for Mark. Yeah. You got pizza guy Mark.
Pizza guy.
Yeah, actually, I still think Sergeant Prick is better, but you know.
Yeah, Sergeant. I'm shot still. I'm getting my wounds healed.
Yes.
So yeah, no. I couldn't. I don't think I could play a pizza guy. I don't think I could. I don't think I have the pizza guy vibe.
Hey, J.J. Abrams did it.
I don't know. I don't see myself.
Do you know what movie? Do you know what movie he played the delivery boy in?
Let me guess. He played the delivery guy in. Let's see. He was writing a movie in the 92, 98. He wrote that, so then maybe before it, he was in there. So then probably something like Leaving Las Vegas.
No, but it was a movie that he wrote. He didn't write Leaving Las Vegas.
Armageddon? No, I'm just joking. Nope.
No. Regarding Henry.
Oh!
With Harrison Ford and Annette Bening. I actually just rewatched it last week. It was a fun movie.
Oh, man, he's been around forever, JJ.
Yeah, yeah. So you have anything else for this minute before we get into the script?
Helicopter gags are crazy. This is nuts. I'm amazed they pulled this off, and I have a lot, like, you know, 24 cameras. That's a lot of work. Yeah. That's a big scene. People don't realize how big that scene was, but it worked. So yeah,
and it's all within less than a minute. It's like 20 seconds of screen time.
Jeez Louise. Hey, they did it. They needed.
That is true. So this minute has a few minor discrepancies in the script. Not too many. First of all, when John taunts Carl, instead of saying, you should have heard your brother squeal, he says, you should have heard your brother scream. Again, not much of a difference there. But then it says, Carl steps in quickly with a deadly move. McClane twists free, slams an elbow into Carl's kidney. Carl backs off, circles McClane with a new kind of respect.
Mm.
And then the conversation between Big Johnson and Little Johnson is the same dialogue, but they switched the timing of it. Like, he first says, stay low, they're expecting transports, not gunships. You know, and then they get into their conversation about the breakage. And then Big Johnson says, instead of figure we take out the terrorists, he says, figure we take out all of the terrorists. So, again, it's very, you know, it's very close. And then Little Johnson says, I can live with those numbers. instead of I can live with that. But I think that I can live with that just flows much better. Instead of having to say I can live with those numbers.
Yeah, I can live with that. Yeah, it makes get, now, cut the words. Cut the words.
Exactly.
I can live with those numbers. Oh, no.
Yeah.
I can live with that.
And when Hans brings Holly in, it says a little bonus for us, shoving her forward violently. A policeman's wife might come in handy. So, you know, it's very similar. You know, not many discrepancies in this minute here. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Holiday Edition, where my guests will give some sort of story about some sort of adventure, anecdote, misadventure, something that's happened to them over the course of their lives that are related to the holidays. So what do you got for us, Mark? Anything?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of my best stories is when I was living in Korea, it was Christmas. And so no one really has their family around during Christmas. So you just kind of get together as a group. So it was just me and my work friends. And I remember it snowed a little bit that night. So we just went outside, kind of had a group bonding session during Christmas. And it was like this really iced over walkway. And I took a piece of cardboard and I basically skateboarded down it on a piece of cardboard. And I'm amazed I'm still alive. So yeah, but it was, you know, when you're out, you know, normally you're used to having friends and family, and in Korea it's just nothing but kind of makeshift families, you know, that come and go because, you know, contracts are different. But I just always remember that night. You know, I know I had about two and almost 3 months left until I left, so I was kind of on the tail end of my visit, and I had made some good friends by then, and we just had a good time. We went out. Nice snowy night, cold night, bundled up as much as I could because I was from Florida. I didn't bring that much. And just had a good time. It was fun. It was a good, good night. I'm not saying it wasn't especially – we didn't get any trouble. We didn't get arrested. We didn't, you know, kick down any doors. I mean, we drank a bunch of Cass or Height, whatever the beer are, some soju. But I always remember that. I skated down an iced over thing on a piece of cardboard.
Cool. Sounds like now, do they? I know that in Japan they talk about the fact they don't celebrate Christmas. Do they celebrate Christmas in Korea?
I mean, there is Christianity. You know, there's a decent amount of churches out there. I didn't go to a Korean church when I, you know, a Christian church when I went out there. But I mean, the people that I worked with were from Canada, were from Ireland, were from, you know, the United States. I mean, I was only American on my soccer team, but still in Australia and New Zealand, you still celebrate Christmas. So,
right.
You know, it's just the people you're around, and you know, we didn't get each other gifts or anything, but I think it was just more like not being alone on that night and just having like a unit together. But it was just a good time. You know, you meet cool people, you have good stories, but I'm just amazed I didn't break anything. That's my story right there. I didn't break anything doing something stupid. I got away with something. So that makes me happy. Like they did with this helicopter scene.
Right. All right, Mark, you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, this is Mark M. Hoffman on Twitter, Movies, Films, and Flicks, Movies, Films, and FLIX on Twitter. You can check out the podcast, Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, Con Air, the podcast. Yeah, check us out.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, or you can go directly to my website. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.